Welcome to Advertising Week Europe 2024 in audio, powered by The Barbershop. In this podcast, we'll bring you the latest insights and trends from industry leaders in advertising and marketing. Join us as we dive into discussions that shape the future of our industry.
Okay, good afternoon. They said speak up, so I'm going to speak up. Last month, the IAB UK's digital ad spend study revealed that the digital advertising market in 2023 surged to 29.6 billion, or if we remove the decimal point, we'll just round that up to 30 billion, marking an impressive 11% year-over-year increase. This growth amidst economic challenges and global unrest underscores the resilience and vitality of digital advertising. But it's not just about the numbers, it's about the impact. For every pound invested in digital advertising, £4.80 flows back into the UK economy, demonstrating its profound macroeconomic benefits. If you think about it, digital advertising isn't just about the clicks and the impressions. It's about powering the services we rely on daily to stay connected, informed, and entertained, often for free, as well as creating meaningful connections with brands. So as we delve deeper into today's discussions, let's remember the pivotal role digital advertising plays in shaping our lives and driving our economy forward. I'm Emma Newman. I'm your host and I'm Chief Revenue Officer for EMEA for PubMatic. And I'm delighted to be joined today by Aisha White, Senior Performance Digital Marketing Manager at People's Postcode Lottery, Ben Foster, Chief Digital Officer at the Kite Factory, and Sarah Holt, Group Marketing Director, UK and Europe, at Merlin Entertainment, all of whom are instrumental in driving digital growth across their organisations. So I kicked off the session by sharing with the audience why I am passionate about advertising beyond it just being my job. And I'd like to understand why advertising is a passion for each of you, again, beyond it being just your day job. So I'm going to ask you first, Aisha, then Ben, then Sarah.
Sure. So when I got started in 2015 in programmatic, I was an ad ops and campaign specialist, and I came from an HR background, and I remember being incredibly overwhelmed. I was like, there's no way I could learn it all. And about almost 10 years later, still feel like there's no absolute way I can learn it all. But I take it as a challenge. Media is a very interesting mix of art and science. So on one hand, you've got beautiful creatives being generated, folks get very passionate, opinionated. And on the other side, we've got the hard metrics, we've got value having to be shown to demonstrate. And for me, it keeps me interested. It's a conundrum, it's a puzzle. And I also don't mind the banter on LinkedIn either. A trade body puts out something new, and there'll be 50 people with very, very strong opinions that are even more passionate than myself. So keeps me interested year after year.
I've heard some roots into digital, and HR is not a path that people normally start in. So well done, I think. Ben?
Yeah, so when I was growing up, I actually wanted to be a management consultant. Wow. At the age of about 12. So wow. I was a nerd, obviously. but it was because I wanted to go into people's businesses and really understand them and what made them tick and help them with the challenges that they're facing. And I kind of somehow fell into that sort of role working in agencies, because my career has entirely been in independent agencies where we really are proper business partners for our clients. And you understand that as important as advertising and marketing is, it's sort of one sort of piece of that pie and it's one stage. And obviously, like you were just saying, if the creative isn't strong enough or the product isn't strong enough or the user experience isn't strong enough, obviously the campaign isn't going to work. So that's why I really enjoy it, is I've somehow ended up with all the things I liked of that idea without the corporate nonsense of that sort of job.
And Sarah?
Well, I started out in ad agencies, and in recent years, I've spent a lot of time working in businesses where I really connect with the purpose and the mission and the values. So at Merlin Entertainment, we may be a business that runs theme parks like Alton Towers and then attractions like the London Eye. But the thing that we do is we bring joy to people's lives. We, during a cost of living crisis, we're fortunate enough to be able to ensure that people have memorable connections with their families and their kids. And that moment of joy is more important than anything else. So I love the creativity of advertising, but what I love most is the benefit that we give to our guests.
That's amazing. So the IAB and PwC study that I referenced at the beginning states that digital advertising spend is forecast to grow by 8.3% in 2024. Now, given that we're 5 months in, is this level of growth aligned with your digital ad spend budgets? And how are you planning to maximise the effectiveness of your budgets this year when taking into consideration the pressure to deliver short-term ROI and longer-term branding impact? Aisha?
The marketer's dilemma, I think. We have to increase sales, but you have to make sure that everybody on the planet knows about the brand and is also considering the brand at the same time. So for us at People's Postcode Lottery, we are actually channel agnostic when we approach media planning. So we have quite a few partnerships with media owners as well as broadcasters. And so we work on those first when we're approaching media planning, and then we kind of slot in how we choose to do digital marketing and work and kind of scoop up that performance. So I think it's correct that we've seen the trend. I don't know if we necessarily follow it, but we're definitely seeing migrations into video, shorter form content, things like that. And so we are definitely following where the performance and the effectiveness are.
And are you seeing a shift in spend of budget into that area?
We have definitely taken some steps to move a bit more into digital, I guess, more than we had maybe in previous years. Yeah.
Okay. And did you see a higher return on that?
We are seeing higher returns. We're seeing a lot more marketing effectiveness. And that's also due to some of the attribution changes we've made as well, which I know we might talk about in a minute.
We might. Sarah?
Oh, wow. That's a big question. So, I mean, not many people will know, but Merlin used to have a very traditional marketing model. So when we would launch a coaster, for example, in the theme parks, we'd spend 80% of our spend on TV. It's now more like 50%. And even when it is 50%, it's much more targeted with lots more addressable and stuff like that. But overall, at a total global level, our spend is now circa 60, 70% digital. And I think we're in a really fortunate position because the type of work that we've done with our media partner in Wavemaker has meant that we have econometrics and MMMs coming out of our ears, which means that even though trading is tough at the moment, the ask from the board is not cut marketing budgets, but Sarah, can you unlock some more headroom somewhere? How can you get more incremental headroom out? So what we're finding is we're actually spending significantly more than we've ever spent on marketing and advertising.
And you're measuring the ROI and you're seeing the ROI of that spend?
We've just gone to latest versions of Maximum Headroom, but certainly in the UK we did. So we had two dips, pre going up to Maximum Headroom and going to new performance channels, and one afterwards. And we had about a 30% increase in ROI. And it wasn't just that we introduced digital into the mix. There were lots of things we did, like we used first party data and really thought carefully about how we can go much more targeted with our advertising, but also understanding the blend with much more broadcast channels like television. So one of the things as we upped things last year, we learned was you cap out at a certain point with those performance channels. So you need to put incremental into TV. And, you know, it's just this sort of a huge sliding scale of how you up what, when, and where, and so on. So, yeah, and we did. We saw our most effective year ever from advertising return in the UK last year.
Fantastic. Ben, let's stick with the ROI theme. So we're seeing advertisers remodel what success looks like to move to a more outcomes-based marketing media mix. Instead of brands relying on traditional measurement performance metrics, we're seeing them move away from short-term metrics like cost per click and cost per install and focus on more strategic measures such as cost per attention, cost per revenue, and customer lifetime value. So how are you approaching the area of outcomes-based media buying? Can you share what's worked for you and perhaps more importantly, what hasn't? And what role do or would you like your technology partners to play in this area?
Yeah. So for a long while, it was very difficult to get our clients to go on that journey of letting go of last click wins as a model. And, you know, what we actually came up with that we found has really, really worked is that we've created an engagement framework, essentially. I mean, it sounds fancy. It's the funnel turned on its side, right? But the idea of it is that instead of concentrating on ROI and sort of CPAs and things like that at the point of conversion, and then quite what I would call fluffy KPIs, media KPIs, non-business metrics in the mid and upper funnel, what we've tried to do is sort of build things from the bottom up. So to understand that, what is the value of somebody handing over their data and signing up to a newsletter? What is the value of a quality site visitor that dwells on the website? If you shift prompted, you know, an unprompted awareness in a brand tracker, what does that actually mean to the bottom line? And if you actually model that up, that's what we've seen really successful, because you can start running those mid and upper funnel campaigns the same way as you would an acquisition campaign. You've got quite a tangible objective. And of course, then when you're speaking to non-media people, client side, that are senior stakeholders, they can understand that because it does link back to their bottom line. And I think in terms of tech partners, it's just getting those business metrics and helping. You're never going to be able to join the dots anymore, you know, and in a linear way. But if you can prove statistically that you move a certain metric and it has a strong business outcome, that's where partners can help. And the partners that have done that within their solutions have definitely benefited from more spend going into them.
Has it been a challenge to get your clients, so the brands themselves, buy into that new way of looking at things?
Yeah, it normally takes about 2 years.
Really?
If I'm honest, yeah. It's not an overnight process at all, because you almost start at the bottom and you sort of work, you start at the bottom in terms of your acquisition campaigns, your brand campaigns. You have to almost like work both of them to get into that messy middle zone. I mean, it's still the holy grail, is this measurement of consideration and understanding and knowledge in that middle. And what you're trying to do is make that as tangible as possible, and it then unlocks way more creativity, new channels, new spends, and things like that.
Okay, thank you, Aisha. So when we were talking, we talked a lot about, you know, you're very acquisition based, very sort of outcomes based business. How are you approaching, you know, the change in perhaps people, the way people are thinking about what outcomes actually are, and how are you planning your media accordingly?
Yes. So People's Postcode Lottery is actually a subscription based business. So we've been able to reap the benefits of switching to an outcomes based model firsthand. So the first switch that we made was for paid search last year, and we immediately saw great returns. Like, it's similar to what Ben has said, right? Like, it's very tangible to be able to understand that this makes a lot more sense, particularly in a subscription product framework. For us, we're looking to see how we can replicate and build on that success for additional channels. So things that have worked for us include looking at incrementality studies in the interim, and also looking at larger macroeconomic pieces that may be contributing to how we're choosing to look at how outcomes can be affected. So we utilize an econometrics partner. What hasn't worked for us, also similar to what Ben said, which is we ditched last click attribution,
right?
Pretty much at this point. It doesn't really tell us anything, and nothing is ever going to be as competitive as search when you look at it in that framework. And then unfortunately, you're always grading everything by search, and then everything else looks quite awful by comparison. And you can never let emerging technologies and emerging platforms in if you're grading it by that sort of framework. So that's what's worked for us. The technology partners with us that we found successful are the ones that are helping us build out a bespoke attribution model that takes these sort of things into account. And we're kind of ditching the, you know, the black box attribution models of the past.
So when you're looking at attribution, what does good look like? Is it increase in subscription? Is it longer lifetime value?
Yeah, absolutely. So, of course, we have sales goals every month. So that's the biggest draw for us. But of course, we're also looking at reducing churn and getting more people to play for longer.
Right. Okay. I'm going to shift gears a little bit and delve a bit deeper into the trends that we're currently seeing in the industry. So Ofcom's Media Nations report highlighted the dynamic nature of media consumption and the growing popularity of video content, paired with video driving the lion's share of ad spend, as I mentioned in the digital ad spend report. So how has this influenced your approach to media mix selection and optimization? And what strategies or technologies have you implemented to maintain or enhance understanding of audiences? So Sarah, I'll start with you.
Oh, well, I mean, we've got basically two different models. We've got a model when we're launching a brand new ride, capital in a big moment. And then we've got what's always on. Like we're always wanting, when the theme parks are open or the attractions are open, we always want tickets to be being sold. And when you've got a big launch, so our biggest launch at the moment is the UK's tallest, fastest roller coaster. I don't know if anyone's seen that, any of the Hyperior ads that broke on Monday. But when you're launching something like that, at Thorpe Park, what you really need is a great big surround sound launch, right? And that's really hard to do when your core audience is 18 to 24 year old thrill seekers. Where are they? How do you do that? And the big conversation we've been having, well, I'm old fashioned. I worked in telly for a long time, like I worked at the BBC, etc., is what's the modern day version of a roadblock, like cross platforms, etc.? And what that's looked like with the Hyperior launch is all kinds of Snapchat filters, all kinds of video content in lots of different versions on TikTok and everywhere else, so that we have that moment, which is a surround sound launch for our core audience. When we're talking about something which is more our day-to-day, we do a lot of work with our new social team where they try and find what are the trends that are really going at the speed of culture. Like, and we have a whole trends hunting team who go and find what's hot with TikTok at that week. So I'm sure many of you know the raccoon trend, or the dancing raccoon with the who was singing, that was in TikTok about 2 weeks ago. So what we found then was that was relevant for all of our attractions and brands, and they were creating video content with giant raccoons dancing through sea life channels at the bottom of Oblivion, all kinds of places, that created bespoke content at the speed of culture, did I think about a million views across all the different places that got involved. But that's about how can you connect in the real internet subculture with video. And then when you take those assets and they've popped and you traffic them to ROAS driving activity, you get some really, really nice returns. I don't know if that answers your question.
Yeah, it does. It does. First of all, your job sounds way more fun than mine. Gonna be honest, I've got no dancing raccoons in my office. And we'll come back to that. But Ben, when I've been talking to agencies, and I think you and I touched on this, you know, there is still a challenge when you know, a brand thinks about video as video. It doesn't think about linear versus Bevo versus VTV, CTV versus OLV versus TikTok versus Snapchat versus whatever it is. They just go, I just want video. And that can obviously be a challenge for agencies because often they're, you know, designed in silos potentially. How are you seeing agencies change the way that they think about planning video to help overcome some of those challenges?
Yeah, you can't think of video in a silo like that. You can't have the old model like you just described and having an AV buying team, you know, linear TV team over there and your digital team sitting somewhere completely separate. So I think the biggest challenge everyone's facing, though, agency side, even with that will to bring it all together, is what you can measure in linear TV, what you can measure on YouTube, what you can measure on connected TV. We've not even then the social platforms. Do you include cinema in that? You know, like, it's completely and utterly different. The metrics you can track, the data basically you can get back from each of those channels. So you can do really great sort of deep dives into each of those ways of buying. But what you need to be able to do is to look at it in an overarching way. How did video work? How did it work when I had this mix, when I had, you know, connected TV as well as linear TV and everything else? So, you know, that's the biggest challenge. And that's when everything we've just said, it comes back to, you know, media mix modeling, if you're spending enough. Incrementality analysis of where, you know, whether that's, you know, holding groups or geographical regions and things like that, to really understand that when you're bringing all these things together, what is the incremental impact in whatever that objective is when you've layered another way of buying into it. But yeah, it's difficult, because if you could get all the data you'd love to get from all these channels, it would be a lot easier. You could compare apples with apples, but you can't. So that's where the craft of sort of media planning is still so important.
And is it easy for you to, again, to sort of talk to your clients about that and say, look, you know, we're going to take your budget. We're not going to silo it the way it has done in the past. And we're going to report back like this. And this is what you can expect to see. And how are they feeling about that?
as always, you need to base absolutely everything in data. So that's where all of the tools about really understanding where the audience is are so important, you know, because, you know, everyone has that opinion and, you know, the data sample of one scenario, you know, you speak to some people, I don't watch any linear TV anymore, you know, sort of thing. And other people, I've never, ever, you know, watched YouTube on my smart TV. Well, the reality is there's lots of people who have. So we have to go in with those arguments backed up. So we use all those great industry tools, you know, the likes of YouGov and TGI, et cetera, to show that these audiences are really shifting. And then when you can show that these audiences are shifting, that unlocks the test. And then obviously, if you measure it right, you can kind of grow it from there.
Thank you. Aisha, what is your approach?
So for us, we're looking at growth audiences, and we had noticed that they're quite different from our historical core audience. So one of the things that we had noticed is that these folks that are in the growth personas are consuming media quite differently than our historical core. And what we also noticed was it was video first. And then the second thing we noticed that there was this very interesting but very engaged subset that was demanding short form. Mm-hmm. So we ended up kind of making not an entire shift, but we also started shifting a little bit more towards short form video. So leaning into YouTube Shorts, the TikToks, Instagram Reels, that sort of thing, to in order to make and meet these folks where they're at and where they're consuming media. Mm-hmm. Other things that we've noticed is that we can no longer utilize the traditional method that we used to use for programmatic video, for example, which is using television cutdowns and then saying, well, that's enough, that's good enough. We were having to meet folks, you know, with social first, so very social native and native feeling video content, and then also some technological partners that we've brought on are the ones that are helping us create creative and content personalization at scale. So being able to meet folks where they're at on these shorter form video first platforms, and also with super personalized messaging that we can then take all of those insights back and be able to make better decisions on how we understand how our audiences engage with us and what's important to them.
Okay. Conscious of time. So as we conclude our conversation, we're observing several intriguing trends as the industry continues to evolve. These include increased media investment in emerging formats such as commerce media and connected TV, the application of AI, because obviously you can't have a panel without talking about AI, and the development of new creative formats and strategies. So as we look ahead to 2024, what's on your watch list and why? Sarah, I'll start with you.
Oh, we've been thinking a lot about this because as we completely diversify our media approach, we need more and more assets in more and more different places. Everything you've just talked about, the need for bespoke assets for bespoke platforms. And actually, I think that there is definitely going to be an opportunity for that to be created at source through AI. Last week I was in Germany with Google, and we were looking at a lot of various different options of how we might build something like that. I think the challenge that I have with all of that is it just becomes a race to the bottom where everything looks the same one way or another, because it's all just taken from what's worked in other places. And actually, we do really amazing work with our big agencies, so TBWA and Creature, when we do our launches. And what they are amazing at is that craft and that originality and that storytelling. And actually, if we just go to an AI model, then we will lose that. So I've been trying really hard to work out what is the right mix of an AI platform that standardizes everything and gets everything to everyone, but then also the craft of the agencies, and then what is brilliant of our social media editors and TikTok creators who really are living in the platforms. And actually, you can't create that through AI. Only they know how you can create a giant raccoon and connect it with what's going on with a sea life tunnel and Oblivion. That's a human that's done that. That is unique from living in internet trends. So how I can get the right model and the right balance as we start going on this journey is something I'm spending a lot of time thinking about.
What about the creative, the actual development of the creative asset itself? Are you using AI in that at all?
Well, we did. So actually, Thorpe Park, UK's tallest, fastest coaster, at the pitch stage between the agency that won, Creature, almost all of their work had been done by AI. And it was amazing. I remember being like, this is like finished ads in a pitch. And that was pretty amazing. It did come with quite a lot of challenges thereafter, like, because you can't just run those ads. Mm. And we were constantly going back to, but can't we just have what we had in the pitch? Mm. And you can't do that. So that was the first time I'd seen something which was completely game-changing in that way.
Just on that note then, Ben, how are you as an agency approaching using AI?
Yeah, I think that what we've tried to do is to split it a little bit, because I think AI is so multifaceted, right? So I think the first thing that we're trying to look at is we're actually splitting out work streams for automation of mundane, repetitive, time-consuming tasks. And then you've obviously got where you're, you know, that's being included under this umbrella of AI as a term in a lot of cases. And actually that automation is what really plays to that technology's strength. It's because that is what obviously creates then the time and the bandwidth for talented people to actually do all the stuff that you've just been talking about, be creative, whether that's creativity in an asset, right? But also creative media planning, having that conversation with a media partner to do something that's never been done before, you know, and stuff like this. So what we're really concentrating on is, you know, every single process that we have got, is there a way of doing this quicker and automating it without foregoing quality, without just making sure that the output's always the same, et cetera? And if that's right, that automation is where our effort is focused, because that'll free up the time to actually get people to be able to, yeah, use their brain a bit more, quite frankly.
So using it as a tool in the toolbox as opposed to sort of being the be-all and end-all of itself.
Exactly right. We're not doing it standalone. It's where does it fit into our planning process? Where does it fit into the way we report and analyse and everything else, rather than it being standalone?
Are you seeing much resistance at all?
No, not if you approach it that way, I think, because I think that everyone understands that you are simply trying to do that so that all those things you would love to do but you always run out of time, that it's going to enable that. And in its simplest way, then everyone's obviously gets behind it.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out how to kind of duplicate myself so that all of the internal meetings that my AI persona can go and do those, and I can go and do some fun stuff like dancing with raccoons and things. So Aisha, you said that, you know, you want to talk a little bit about connected television and how you're approaching that at People's Postcode Lottery.
Right. So we do have these unique partnerships with our broadcast partners. And we've been on a journey with them as they're bringing online their OTT sort of products and how they're going to move forward. But we're also very interested at People's Postcode Lottery and the challengers as well, specifically Netflix and Amazon. I read an article recently, I think it was last week, that said Amazon is coming out with 3 shopping units that will exist only within the Amazon Prime Video player. And I remember reading it and being very confused. I was like, but the ad-supported tier is only like 6 months old. I was like, how did they innovate so quickly? Like, how did that happen? And so I think the challenge here, similar to what everybody else has said, is that there's going to be so much innovation going on. We're going to need to see, basically, to separate the wheat from the chaff, we're going to have to see, you know, who's doing something that actually provides value and not just a race to the bottom to slap AI on things and call it good. I also have probably a bit of a hot take where I think that the AI things that are coming in the future and that will be winning in about 6 months to a year are probably the ones that are not going to compete with the Metas, like the Advantage Pluses and like the Google PMaxes. I think they're the ones that are going to provide a value add to those products instead of competing with those products and those built-in platform AIs generally. And so I think it's interesting because that seems to be what Amazon's kind of done. So
yeah. Brilliant. Okay, right. We are at time. So I want to just say thank you very much to my panelists, Aisha, Sarah, Ben, for sharing your view through your lens. It's certainly been a learning curve for me and lots to take away. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Advertising Week Europe 2024 in audio. Stay connected with us on social media using the handle @AdvertisingWeek and visit our website europe.advertisingweek.com for more exclusive content. This podcast was produced by Podcanda, the audio conference solution.